I can't ask what would happen if this bill passes. There'll be other parents who don't have to go through what my wife and I went through.
New legislation that could help stop overdose deaths. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, January 29th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Governor Walker pushes for progress on the gas line, but producers push back.
Well, we have to be realistic about the project in this current price environment, and we have to be realistic about the commercial challenges that sit in front of us.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Artists make us think and question. They excite and engage. Artists inspire Alaska. The 2016 Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Awards grant program is now accepting applications. Individual Artist Awards support Alaska artists in 10 creative disciplines at all career stages. The program is open to Alaska residents only. For details and to apply, visit rasmussen.org/IAA. The deadline is March 1st, 2016. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
As if lawmakers don't have enough on their plates trying to close a $3.5 billion budget hole, this week brought a reminder that the state is also trying to advance a natural gas mega, make that giga, project. That would be Alaska LNG, the effort to build a massive gas line from the North Slope to Cook Inlet. With natural gas prices following oil in an extended plunge, lawmakers heard this week that the project faces significant economic headwinds. Meanwhile, tension between the Walker administration and the state's three oil company partners once again spilled into the open. APRN's Rachel Waldholtz reports.
I call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today's
lawmakers heard a series of updates on the Alaska LNG project. The upside? Technical progress is on time and on budget. That's according to project manager Steve Butt. The downside? Just about everything else. Representatives from ExxonMobil, BP, and ConocoPhillips, the state's three partners, testified Wednesday. In his opening statement, Conoco's Leo Earhart said his company is committed to Alaska LNG.
Well, we have to be realistic about the project in this current price environment, and we have to be realistic about the commercial challenges that sit in front of us.
Like oil prices at their lowest levels in over a decade, gas prices at their lowest levels in a decade and a half, and more LNG on the market than buyers can absorb. Prices will rise, Earhart said, but nobody knows when. Meanwhile, for the project to move forward, the companies must complete a series of agreements among themselves and with the state. In a letter sent to the companies in mid-January, Governor Bill Walker insisted those agreements must be submitted to the legislature by the end of the current session. That seems unlikely, Earhart said.
The governor has identified a list of agreements that he wants to see completed before the special session. This will be a very difficult task to accomplish.
Representatives from ExxonMobil and BP echoed that point. And if that's not ominous enough, Earhart went on.
And should we find an impasse to these agreements, ConocoPhillips will not stand in the way of the project and will make our gas available to the state.
If that sounds like Conoco has one foot out the door, a spokesperson reiterated that the company is committed. But key deadlines are looming. The three companies are seeking what they call fiscal certainty, meaning they want to lock in tax rates on the project to avoid the decades of litigation that followed the construction of the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. That would likely require a constitutional amendment, and that requires a vote this November. The governor says he can't support an amendment unless the other contracts are signed, including agreements on the governance structure for the project, how the state would access its share of the gas, and, stickiest of all, an agreement among the producers themselves about how to supply the project. In fact, the governor wrote, if the partners can't agree, he will have no other choice but to consider other options for commercializing Alaska's gas.
Really, it's just a matter of I wanted to be clear what my expectations are.
Meanwhile, Senator Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat, asked the question on many Alaskans' minds.
How likely is this project to happen at this point, would you say?
I'm hesitant to put a number on it since I've been working on this since 1992.
That's Bill McMahon of Exxon. He ticked off a series of factors in the project's favor, including the fact that all three leaseholders and the state are working together. And he noted that by the end of this year, the project will have gone further than any previous effort. In the end, he says, he's bullish on Alaska gas. From the Energy Desk, I'm Rachel Waldholtz in Anchorage.
33 Alaskans died from heroin overdoses last year, a dramatic increase from just 5 years ago when only 4 people died. Another 54 Alaskans died of prescription pain reliever overdoses in 2015. Some of those deaths may have been prevented through the use of an opioid antidote, which can rapidly reverse overdoses. APRN's Andrew Kitchenman reports on a legislative effort to make it easier for overdose victims to get the life-saving drug, naloxone.
Some doctors feel comfortable prescribing naloxone, but others are wary of facing lawsuits related to drug overdoses. That's why state lawmakers are considering Senate Bill 23, which would provide civil immunity to doctors who prescribe naloxone, also known by the brand name Narcan. Family members of overdose victims are urging legislators to act. Juneau resident Gary Miller's daughter died last May from an overdose after taking heroin.
I kept asking myself, what if I'd done this or what if I'd done that? Would she still be alive today? I finally had to stop doing that. I was driving myself insane doing that. But I can't ask what would happen if this bill passes. There'll be other parents who don't have to go through what my wife and I went through. There'll be other drug users who will get another chance at life.
The bill would also give immunity to pharmacists who provide the medication and people trained to administer it to overdose victims. But bill sponsor Senator Johnny Ellis, a Democrat from Anchorage, is considering widening the immunity to cover more people who could help overdose victims. Naloxone can be easily injected into a person's muscles. The Federal Food and Drug Administration also approved a nasal spray form in November. Naloxone is considered safe, which is one reason advocates for the bill want it to be widely available. Christina Love is an advocate at Aiding Women in Abuse and Rape Emergencies, a shelter in Juneau.
Expanded access to this life-saving drug would send a statement to the public. We are worth it, and every life matters. I can't remember there ever being a training to the opiates that I was given, that I was prescribed. The only side effect to this drug is life. I can't help but think if this bill would have been passed last year, how many precious lives would still be with us.
The bill also allows doctors to prescribe what's known as a standing order to a pharmacy. This will allow the person who's been prescribed the drug, a family member, or a friend to pick up a prescription. Dr. Jay Butler, the state's chief medical officer, noted that in Rhode Island, pharmacies can dispense naloxone prescriptions to anyone who needs them. Representative Paul Seaton, a Homer Republican, encouraged Butler to do something similar in Alaska.
The goal of everybody is to make sure that we have something safe and effective and available throughout the state, not just dependent upon what a local doctor and a local pharmacist would do.
The Senate passed the bill 19-1 last April. The House Health and Social Services Committee recently held a hearing on the bill. Bill sponsor Ellis praised Seaton, the chairman of the committee, for focusing on a bill sponsored by a member of the other party.
Representative Seaton, to his credit and his committee, realize that this isn't about normal procedure or partisan politics. It's a life or death, literally a life or death situation.
Ellis is hopeful the House will pass the bill and Governor Bill Walker will sign it before the legislative session ends. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The State Division of Insurance is working to reassure Moda Health members today. The health insurer announced yesterday it's pulling out of the individual market in Alaska and Oregon. That's after both states put the company under supervision, citing the company's financial condition. The action prevents Moda from selling new policies or renewing plans on group plans. At a news conference in Juneau today, Division Director Lori Wing Heyer said she advises Moda members on individual and group plans to keep paying their premiums.
If at such point that Moda is put into receivership and we feel that they are unable to pay the claims that they are incurring, we will take the next step and work with the consumers, the Guarantee Association in the state of Alaska, Primera, and CMS to transition those plans so that the consumers are not impaired.
Wing Heyer says Moda representatives are flying to Juneau Monday to meet with her and other state officials. A Moda spokesperson declined an interview request, but wrote in an email the company hopes to salvage its small and large group business in Alaska. Jonathan King is a vice president at Northern Economics in Anchorage. His firm, which includes 15 people, has been covered under a Moda plan since 2008. The policy renewed in January, but King is taking the news of Moda's financial struggle in stride.
Did it surprise me yesterday? Yes. Am I concerned about it? Yes. On the other hand, you know, things go up and down and you just keep on chugging along.
King says when Moda entered the Alaska health insurance market several years ago, the company provided much needed competition for Primera Alaska. He says Moda has offered good service to the firm's employees. King says shopping for health insurance is one of the most stressful aspects of operating a small business in the state.
This is one of the curses of living in Alaska is that, you know, we have a very thin health insurance market. Our health insurance costs are extraordinarily high. And also medical care, the cost of medical care is extraordinarily high. So it's definitely a challenge every year from a business perspective.
King hopes Northern Economics will have the option to renew with Moda next year, assuming the company can come up with an adequate business plan. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, remembering Eva Salidis.
I hadn't really read much writing by somebody who was both a poet and a scientist.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. The Older Persons Action Group is the publisher of the monthly Senior Voice newspaper and the 2016 directory for older Alaskans. To order the directory or to learn more, go to seniorvoicealaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Anchorage police have released the names of the two victims found early Thursday morning on a beach near a local park. They are 19-year-old Selena Annette Molinax and 20-year-old Foreen Aubert Morissette. Police are releasing few details in the case, including cause and time of death, pending autopsy results. Molinax's body was discovered by a person walking a dog near Earthquake Park around 8:30 Thursday morning. Police arrived to investigate and about an hour later discovered the second victim, Aubert Morissette, still alive but with critical injuries. Aubert Morissette died hours later at an Anchorage hospital. Aubert Morissette was scheduled to appear in court for a pretrial conference on Tuesday. He had been arraigned in February of last year on charges, including armed robbery, assault, and weapons misconduct. His trial had been scheduled for March. Anchorage voters will elect five of the city's 11 assembly members this April. Filing for those races opened today, and as Alaska Public Media's Zechariah Hughes reports, city officials have devised an ingenious ritual to keep elections as fair and impartial as possible.
All right. You.
City Clerk Barbara Jones is surrounded by staff as she pulls wooden Scrabble tiles out of a jar at random.
We think it's an old set.
This is how the city sets the order for candidate names to appear before voters on election day in the interest of an impartial ballot. The clerk's office wants that name order to be random, so each year all 26 letters of the alphabet get tossed together and ceremoniously rearranged before the watchful, neutral gaze of city officers, as well as a smattering of reporters. You might be thinking, why does this matter? Why mess up the alphabet? It's a good alphabet. Don't mess with it. Well, it's because the alphabetical ordering brings a little bit of bias. The order of where a candidate's name appears on a ballot ends up influencing election results. Not by a ton, but enough to matter to academics, politicians, and pollsters. So the city's clerks have had to come up with a way to make sure candidate A doesn't get an undeserved advantage over candidate Z when a voter's eyes scan the ballot.
We hope that people go to the name that's the best qualified candidate.
Almost half of the city's assembly seats are up for election, spanning all of the municipality except for the downtown district. The local filing period lasts until February 12th, and though we won't officially know who's on the ballot until candidates have submitted that local paperwork with the clerk's office, a separate filing process through the state's Public Office Commission gives a picture of who intends to run. District races in South, East, and West Anchorage are all competitive. Just one person has filed a run against veteran Assembly Chair Dick Traney for his Midtown seat, and so far, Amy Domboski is running to keep her District 2 seat in Chugiak Eagle River unopposed. Voters elect their assembly members on April 5th, alongside ballot measures on bonds and a marijuana sales tax. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Homer is mourning the death of a beloved writer, scientist, and teacher. Eva Salinas died January 16th of cancer. Homer Council on the Arts will award Salinas a Lifetime Achievement Award posthumously today. The Kachemak Bay campus of the Kenai Peninsula College will hold a memorial reading this evening. KBBI's Daisha Eaton has more.
Eva Salidis' poems capture a snapshot of rural life in Homer, where she lived. Her student, Miranda Weiss, reads one of her favorites.
This poem is called The Egg Couplets. Only one egg today when I trudged out to throw slop to the hens, scatter ash on the path. It's February, the sun's coming back, and now when he hears my voice, Olaf throws his head back and crows.
Salidis was a scientist, a poet, an essayist, and an instructor at the local college. She also worked as a professor through the Low Residency MFA in Creative Writing program at University of Alaska Anchorage. And she helped organize the Kachemak Bay Writers Conference. She's best known for her work about whales called Into Great Silence, a memoir of discovery and loss in the realm of vanishing orcas, now assigned in college classrooms. But she also wrote poetry in books titled Many Ways to Say It and Prayer in Wind. Salidis is remembered for her ability to mix artistic and scientific writing and an openness that fostered creativity in her students.
I hadn't really read much writing by somebody who was both a poet and a scientist, or somebody who could write lyrically and also, you know, richly scientific and with a real keen eye to natural history. That was new to me.
Weiss says her first class with Salidis hooked her. Salidis lit a candle in the middle of the room and then asked the students to tell their own stories.
I imagine that these were stories people had never written about and likely never even told anybody about, stories from people's lives, the lives of the people in the class. And so she just had this way of inviting that and making that okay and inviting people to write what was really important to them.
Salidis' final book, Becoming Earth, is set to come out in 2017. It starts with reflections on her recurrence of cancer and moves through the process of her anger dealing with it, then ends with meditations on death. Miranda Weiss says she remembers her teacher best through that poem about her simple walk to the chicken coop and back.
I just walked to the chicken coop and back. That was all. I placed an egg in the tray that marks a string of days laid out like that. A life lived out, egg by egg. It was pretty good.
Pretty good, say friends and colleagues, is an understatement. And they'll be there Friday evening to celebrate just how well Salidis lived and died. In Homer, I'm Daisha Eaton.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Red Dog Mine, committed to environmental excellence.
Artists make us think and question. They excite and engage. Artists inspire Alaska. The 2016 Rasmussen Foundation Individual Artist Awards Grant Program is now accepting applications. Individual Artist Awards support Alaska artists in 10 creative disciplines at all career stages. The program is open to Alaska residents only. For details and to apply, visit rasmussen.org/IAA. The deadline is March 1st, 2016. This message sponsored by the Rasmussen Foundation.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamute.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Jillian Rogers. This week on AK, Portrait. As 2015 came to a close, Juno artist M.K. McNaughton finished a year-long art project that portrayed 52 of her fellow community members, or a portrait a week for a year. McNaughton picked her subjects not for how they look, but for what they do, where they do it, and how hard they work at it. On 18 by 18 archival paper, she used charcoal to draw portraits of a seldom recognized group of people. KTOO's Scott Burton has more.
A construction site in the middle of winter in a city in a rainforest in Alaska is a unique place to find inspiration for an art project.
There were some guys working on the district building, and it was January, I think.
It may sound lackluster, but M.K. McNaughton saw potential.
It was like sideways rain, horrible snow, slush, windy, and they were there every day. I drove by in my cozy little car and went to my cozy little studio, and I thought, oh, I should draw one of those guys.
The possibilities multiplied from there. An electrician, a fisherman, a midwife, a hospital custodian, a landscaper, detox support staff, a postal carrier, a counselor, a welder. McNaughton says her subjects work in professions that often go unrecognized all over Juneau and have
exceptional tenacity or work ethic or work hard jobs in the elements.
She then conceived the Portrait a Week idea, which would include an interview and photograph of the subject. She got started and hung her first portrait at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center the first week of January 2015.
It's kind of flattered, really.
Meet Sherman Johnson. He's portrait 33 of 52. He'd been recommended to McNaughton by Beth Weldon, a firefighter, portrait 17 of 52. He's been welding, fitting, and fabricating since he was a teenager. He says the work he does is hard to see because it makes things look normal.
Ideally, you shouldn't tell I was there. It should look like it just came out, you know, that things were just supposed to be like that. But I'm proud of my work and I'm proud of what I do. I try and do a nice job on things. You know, the quality of what I do is the big, that's the driving thing for me.
Among other jobs, Juneau's power company has hired Johnson to weld in the tunnels of their hydroelectric plant and to install a new valve on a major dam. He's repaired and modified countless fishing boats and is helping with the new state library, archives, and museum building. He says a lot of work in the trades is like his, essential but invisible.
You know, and I think that's how a lot of all these working people that MK found, that's how they are. They just, you know, they get down and go do their stuff, and it means putting on your rain gear? It means putting on your rain gear. You realize there's so much more of the world out there and so many people doing so many little things that you just don't notice.
McNaughton sat down with each subject and asked them questions about their work and even personal questions about challenges in their lives and dreams for the future. Then she took the picture. She says knowing the person informed her drawings. Johnson appreciated the interview, too.
It was neat because it was in my office where she took the picture and I was on my chair. And even though I was expecting to get my picture taken, I thought it caught more of what I probably look like, as opposed to when you're thinking about getting your picture taken or you're at a party and you're with some people or something and everybody's smiling and doing the thing. This was a picture of me where this is my place. This is where I'm the most comfortable. So, yeah, it was funny. Made me smile. Still makes me smile. Makes me laugh every day.
He's right. You can't help but smile when you look at his portrait.
I've been trying to put up some pictures lately, so I'll find a place for myself that's, you know, not right as you walk in the door, like, here I am, but I liked it.
McNaughton says there's usually a gift at the end of her projects or the answer to something personal she's trying to figure out. In this case, she decided the time was right to transition from working at a nonprofit to teaching and exhibiting full-time.
I just turned 51, and I'm thinking about retirement, and my teenage boys are heading off to college, and I realize it's a transition time for me, and all these questions about your goals and hopes and difficult times in your past and dreams for the future. So I think this project has been kind of a way to give myself the courage to keep doing what I love doing.
McNaughton gave each portrait to her subjects for free. She says each piece averaged about 7 hours to create, which means the project altogether took about 364 hours. She didn't have a grant or make any money, which isn't going to help send her kids to college. At least the next time she needs a welder or an electrician or a landscaper, she'll know who to call. She may even get a good deal. In Juneau, I'm Scott Burton.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Altheria Fields Roberts, who lives in Anchorage. She says when she moved to the state 3 decades ago, she didn't fall in love with her new home instantly.
I thought, it's so hick! What have I done? What have I done? And I thought, well, gotta give it a year. You know, and if it wasn't gonna work out in a year's time, Washington, here I come, Washington State.
they found jazz for me. I said, if there's no jazz here, I have to go. And my friends found jazz for me. Then I felt like, this is home. It was a group called Chromosome. They were so good. When I found the jazz, I was like this. I've got someplace to go in the summer and the winter now. That was 31 years ago. It was time for a change for Michigan. Just a drastic change. It was slower than Detroit. Much, much, much slower than Detroit. Not so intense, you know. I like outdoors. When my children were younger, I used to really like sledding. Now I'm not liking walking up those hills so much with the grandchildren. I just stay on the bottom and cheer them on, you know. I say, come on, you can do it, come on. So I like outdoor, I like the snow. And then I watched the city grow. It was a little baby, little hick town, and I watched it grow into a big city. The first time I ever stayed in a tent was in Alaska. Stayed out in a tent. It was in, I get those caves all mixed up, Kenai, where you go fishing. And I actually stayed in a tent, overnight, in a tent. That was my Alaskan tale. Never stayed in the tent ever before in my whole life until then.
Altheria Fields Roberts lives in Anchorage. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. If you want to tell your story, send an email to news@alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Scott Burton, Wesley Early, Annie Feit, and Dave Waldron. Tune in next week for more unique stories from across the state. I'm Jillian Rogers.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also find us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Rachel Waldholtz, Zachariah Hughes, and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, and Dacia Eaton in Homer. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Ron Zastro. And I'm Lori Townsend. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
the 2016 statewide BP Teachers of Excellence program. Teacher nomination forms are available at bpteachers.com. Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco, and it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline. Your household income and the size of your family might qualify you for savings on your health care costs. You have until Sunday, January 31st, to enroll in the Health Insurance Marketplace. Call 1-844-PLANS-AK. That's 1-844-752-6725 to find local assistance in your area. There's more information online at getcoveredalaska.org. This message sponsored by Alaska Primary Care Association.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.